This is a Crowd podcast.
Hello, I'm Geraint Thomas.
And I'm Tom Fordyce.
And you've just entered the Geraint Thomas Cycling Club.
Brought to you by Zwift, the indoor cycling app. Jump on your smart trainer and jump into Zwift.
Croeso, or welcome.
So Geraint, your globe-trotting at the start of 2023 carries on. So you've done Tour Down Under in Adelaide, you spent some time in New Zealand, and you're in Los Angeles now. So first of all, how was your final week in New Zealand?
Yeah, it was wet. It was nice down south, and then we flew up to North Island because, yeah, we had these, yeah, wanted to see more. And I had all these things booked for stuff for us to do and that, and still managed to train well, but... yeah, well, as soon as we got to North Island, we were staying in Airbnb and the woman messaged us saying there's a red weather warning for rain. So, yeah, if you need to stay another day, then, you know, we can sort something out. You know, we don't have to pay full price, whatever. And then we looked into it more and it's like, yeah, if you're staying in Rotorua near water, probably best to get out of there if you can. And we were just like, holy moly, what's happening? And this is when we're at some like Maori, you know, where they just teach you about the culture and stuff. And this is at like 8:30 at night. And we're thinking, oh no, like we're not going to be able to pack up now because we got like about 5 cases and 4 hand luggages and a bike in the Airbnb. So we're not going to be able to pack that up like in a split second. And obviously got Max as well, who's overtired and giddy. So, but anyway, had a few changes of plan, but it was all right in the end. The weather wasn't even that bad really. So, you know, it rained a lot more in Cardiff, I think. But no, it was strange for that, for New Zealand summer. I didn't really expect so much rain, but it was all good though. We still got a lot of good training in.
We also used your time in New Zealand to record a very special bonus ep of the pod, didn't we? Which we'll put out in a couple of weeks.
Yes. Yeah. Are we saying who it was?
I don't know. Why don't we do a little bit of a tease?
Okay. It's not much of a teaser, is it? I don't know what to say because...
why don't we say it's one of New Zealand's greatest ever sportsmen who has now got into cycling. And if people have been on your social media, they may guess. Yeah. If they haven't, they can start making their list of New Zealand's greatest sportsmen.
Yeah, it is a good one. It was pretty... I was a bit nervous might be the wrong word, but... or anxious or... I don't know, that makes it sound like really thing, but... I was a bit like, ooh, you know, normally I know them, you know, and they're cyclists and it's just like, you know, take the piss and stuff. But, you know, when it's, well, you wouldn't want to take the mick out of this guy, would you? Even if it's online or not, you know?
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. He's a big, strong man. Talking of big, strong men, good timing for our guest today because the Six Nations has started. Before we get today's guest on, how are you feeling about the Gatland era part deux? You optimistic for Wales?
Yeah. You know, and not everyone's not just talking about, you know, PVAC and how bad Wales are, blah, blah, blah. Everyone's, you know, they're still going to have been training and working 100%, but now the whole narrative, so to speak, around them is a lot more upbeat. So I think that's going to be great for the boys. All right, should we get him on? Took your line there. Never said that.
We all love coffee, don't we, G?
Never do this pod without one, Tom. Or a ride, actually.
Yeah, there is nothing better than a quick coffee for a cold winter ride or before hopping on Zwift. So, I know we'll both be delighted with the next sponsor of this podcast, Origin Coffee. Also, there is a cheeky discount code we've got for all our listeners. Origin Coffee are one of the leading brands on the coffee scene, and they get just how much cyclists love coffee.
And get this, Tom. Origin's director of coffee, Freda, is a 3 times UK cup tasting champion.
Not once, Geraint, not twice, but 3 times. That is pretty impressive. Would you like another great fact? All online orders are roasted and shipped the very same day. Super speedy, just how we like it on this podcast. They also have a rewards program, so customers like you and me can earn points and get cash back every time we shop online.
So why not try one of their delicious espresso blends or an interesting single origin coffee? There are so many profiles to try, and all the coffee comes in home compostable bags. So if you want to order some Origin coffee and get a massive 30% off, just go to origincoffee.co.uk and use the code GTCC30 at checkout.
That's the code GTCC30 at checkout. Go and get yours today. Enjoy!
Right, Tom, it's time we got a Welsh guest on now, the best type of guest for the GTCC, or any podcast for that matter. He's a former Welsh captain, former British and Irish Lions captain, but his greatest achievement, he's now a podcaster like me. Welcome to the GTCC, Sam Warburton.
Hey, lads. No, thanks for having me on. Pleasure. So, yeah, really looking forward to it. I'm sure it'll be a fun hour ahead. But, yeah, I'm a podcast like you, G. So, you've always been the one I've been chasing. You were always winning things first in sport. And then you sort of you've set the benchmark with podcasts as well. Don't try and follow your lead on that as well, mate.
Well, you stopped before me, though, didn't you? Because I remember jumping straight into it. The day you retired was the day that I won my first road stage in the Tour at La Rossier. I took the yellow jersey. Was the day you announced your retirement, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's mad to you because I'm 34 next month in October. And it's still strange because, say, obviously, everyone always talks about, I say everyone, the people who do mention us as, you know, you, me and Gareth. And like, you know, Gareth's obviously my age, still going. You're a few years older, still going. I'm like, flipping heck, like, you boys are almost going to have another whole half of your careers while I've sort of just been sitting on the side eating Maltesers and just chilling out, not doing much. You know, you boys are still at the elite level. So I admire how you keep going and keep that from a mental perspective as well. So, no, good on you, mate. It's a hell of a shift you've been putting in so far.
Yeah, it's taking its toll now, though. I'm starting to get a few grey hairs. A lot more grey hairs, I mean.
Mate, look at my chin. Have you seen my chin? Shock. Yeah, and that's not playing. That's kids, I think.
No, I think rugby is a completely different sport, mind, isn't it? Jesus, it's like compared to cycling. Or okay, you get some big crashes in cycling, but stay on your bike is pretty easy on your body. Is big old difference because a lot of rugby players go into bike riding as well, don't they?
Do you know what? You'll know I did that ride for Velindra not long ago, and that was my first proper road ride. And I was I actually found the climbing really enjoyable because you sort of go into that mental space and you're sort of digging in a bit. And I'd actually much rather go up than go down. And we had this big day. I say big day, but for us it was a big day going up. And there must have been about, you probably descend it in half an hour, but we were going, it felt like we were going down for hours, hours and hours. We climbed for about 4 hours and came down in about an hour or two. But I took ages and everyone's looking at their Strava going, like looking at their top speeds. And there's people going to like 45, 50 mile an hour. They're like, oh, Warbs, what was your top speed? It's in the whole day going down now. And there's some sort of decent gradients. And I was like 26 mile an hour. So I was like in the middle of the road because there's like ditches in Mallorca on the side. And I was like in the middle of the road. And there's all these Europeans like flying past me shouting because obviously my bike etiquette was terrible. I was in the middle of the road, absolutely papping myself, going off into a ditch on the brakes nonstop. And like, they're shouting at me and I'm like swearing back in English, like, because I'm like sort of scared in the road. And then I was chatting to the tour guide and I was saying, mate, you're mad. I had a whole new appreciation for like things you do, never mind going on like cobble and stuff. And I was like, I was terrified going down. I don't know how you and the pro boys do it and don't worry. I'm thinking, what if like an animal runs out in front of me or a stick gets in my spokes and I'm coming off? I've got kids. If I come off this at 50, I'm gone. Never mind it, like, even at 26 mile an hour, I was panicking. I said, how many options have you had, you know? And he said it's all perspective. He said, how many operations have you had playing rugby? And I said 7. He said, well, I think you're bonkers. And I was like, yeah, touche. I know what you mean, sort of thing. Because I think, well, I'm much more comfortable running into 18 stone blokes than going downhill on a bike at 50 mile an hour. That terrifies me. So I guess it's all perspective what you're used to. But yeah, that was an eye-opener for me, to be fair, that charity ride. So yeah, they are, you're right, very different sports. Both, I think, both dangerous. Not that it's a competition of what's more dangerous. Both dangerous, but very daring at the same time.
Yeah, so on that ride, where did you go? You did Sac Calabria, didn't you?
We did Sac Calabria. I loved it. So we went up. And some people obviously didn't do it. They like, because you got, it's a good climb to get up there, to be fair. You've got to climb a fair way to get up. And then they said, yeah, right, we've got to do another sort of 10 minutes. Then we've got to descend. And you've got to come all the way back up. And some people were like, oh, no, the couple of climbs that we did was fine. But I loved the climbing. And because I had like a turbo trainer in the house. So, but what I was naive at, I didn't do much road cycling. All I did, I'd go on like the turbo trainer at night. I literally put on a few podcasts, some music. I literally climbed for like 2-3 hours. So I was like, I'm not going to get embarrassed and not be able to climb. So I was the climbing, I was like, I found it okay. You just pick a nice rhythm, you know, found someone I could chat to, sort of thing, and just climb, sort of thing. But then going down, I found Harbour, the Sacalab. I got up, and there was a guy who did a triathlon. He's just actually done the triathlon in Wales now. And I got up to the top, and there's like loads of people. I know you'd laugh at this, but there's people like in tears, hugging each other, like because they were so proud that they did it. And I was, and they were all saying, "Oh my god, that's like the hardest thing I've ever done." And I just looked at this Ironman guy. I was like, "Man, I love that. I loved the." And don't get me wrong, it was hard. Of course, it was flipping hard. But I loved that sort of like battle with yourself, where you just sort of right, get into a little dark space and just climb. And I'm not going to let it beat me, you know. And I don't know, maybe sports have a little bit of a different mindset. And it was painful and it was hard. But I love that adversity and like trying to climb and prove people wrong. So I bet a lot of people thought, he's 16, 17 still. He's got no chance getting up there. But I loved it. I thought it was tough. And it was one of the hardest things, probably the single hardest thing I did aerobically, because that's completely out of my comfort zone. But I strangely loved it.
Sounds to me, G, like we've got a convert here. And it also sounds to me like we need to be recommending Sam his next climbs that he has to take on.
Yeah, definitely. We had Martin Johnson on, didn't we? And he sounded exactly the same as what Sam does now. You know, it's just, I guess when you retire as well from professional sport, like you always want that challenge, don't you? Like you know, when you're a pro athlete, you're constantly like training for something, you've got these big goals and big targets. So when you stop, it must be, that's one thing I've been thinking about, you know, because obviously, who am I kidding, you know, it's going to come to an end at some point. And the thought of like not doing anything is just kind of strange. So yeah, it's good to see like these boys now, they've kind of, not that they've turned into like bike riders like 24/7, but just having those challenges to sort of really just get you out of bed in the morning and that are tough and like really sort of scare you almost, like, or because think about it, like, I don't know, I'm going to make up a number now, but playing rugby must be, I don't know, what's the longest, like, before there's like a stoppage or like, you know, a break, it must be like 90 odd seconds, 2 minutes max, I don't know. But like on a bike, you're riding for, what, 6 hours?
Yeah, that's it. So in rugby, like the longest, on like if you get 2 minutes, like you're right, that's pretty long. A freakish run of play can go to 3 to 4, but that's like, that's every once in a blue moon. So about, yeah, you're right, 90 seconds to 2 minutes is about right. And that's why like, you know, 6-7 hours of cycling is just absolutely alien. You don't, in rugby, you don't train for that. So say somebody says to me, oh yeah, I'm going on like 10K runs and then running jogging for an hour. I'm like, well, it's very unspecific to rugby because one, you only cover 6 or 7 kilometers. Two, it's multi-directional, up and off the floor, including contact, acceleration, deceleration. It's not just a one-paced leisurely jog. So that's why cycling is so different to rugby, because it's continuous. The good thing is that's why I think boys like the hills, the rugby lads like the hills, because they like pushing and trying to go through that. I think the stuff which I think everyone I've spoken to seems to be naturally find most alien is the downhill, the descending and going at speed. The speed thing is the thing that we find really hard, but being able just to grind uphill is okay. So I love that. I'd rather, like skiing, you get a ski lift to take you to the top, then you come down. I wouldn't mind climbing up to the top and having a ski lift to bring me back down on a bike. So if you could do that, I'd be all over it.
Sam, as you got into road biking, what were the sort of rookie mistakes that you found yourself making? Because everyone does this, and for some people it might be struggling with clipping pedals and having the moment in the traffic lights where they just gradually fall over to the left. What was it for you? Because I've heard you had an issue with bib shorts the first time that you pulled a pair on.
Oh, I put them on back to front and I looked like the Big Show off WWE. I didn't know how to put on a pair of bib shorts. So I went to this shop, I got sized up, I walked out, I was like, guys, I feel a little bit exposed at this. And they're like, oh, no, it's back to front. You're meant to have that bit is on your back and you're meant to have it, the straps coming all the way down. I didn't know what. I thought it was like a leotard. I was like, you know, are they meant to be just short? So they're meant to go over my shoulders. Like, oh, no, they are meant to go over your shoulders, you know. So I literally was complete novice at cycling. I got like a mountain bike and I've been out on the mountain bike, but I mean, you don't clip in on a, not at the level I was just going out on. Didn't clip in on a mountain bike. I don't think you do anyway at pro level. I'm not sure. But yeah, that was alien to me. But even now, like a rugby player, ex-player, coaching Saracens now, and I saw a picture of his knees. He came off a bike and his knees have both been like sort of sliced right open. And I think anyone who's been cycling for a long amount of time, who's pretty experienced, not at your level, G, like just even recreationally, they've all come off. And that's the only thing that worries me. And I don't mean coming off at a traffic light. I was actually okay at clipping in and stuff. But like going into a car or something like that, That's the only thing that freaks me out, is just getting, because I've gone through so much injury playing rugby. The thought of, you know, I got two young kids now. If I had to come back and be like, oh, sorry, I've come off a bike, and then I'm useless around the house, I'm not sure I could. Oh, that would cause a lot of unnecessary stress, you know. So I haven't been out on a bike since, actually, because it's actually deceptively, I didn't realise how time consuming it was going to be to train for this sort of event. And I think they actually cut back the event a lot because a lot of people didn't train for it properly. I think they really underestimated it. And I sort of, knowing, obviously following G and having a basic understanding of cycling, I saw the sort of itinerary and I was like, oh, you can't just turn up for this, you know, you're gonna have to put some hours in. So I remember telling people what my hours were like and how I strategically increased them over about 3-4 months, and they were all laughing, going, oh my god, you'll find it easy, because everyone will just go out on the flat for 1 or 2 hours that they've got it, where I was like doing, making sure I was putting in like a lot of climbing and things like that, then just putting in some general work going flat. But yeah, I think because I got little kids, when they get older, my eldest is in school, my youngest nearly in school. When he's in school, I think I'll be able to justify the time to go out a little bit more. But there's still quite a bit to do, you know, with a young family and work bits and stuff. So another few years, I'll probably be doing a bit more cycling, a little bit more golfing, stuff like that. But right now, I'm sort of in the thick of family life as well. So yeah, tricky balance to get out on the bike at the minute.
I can imagine you kind of lose that card, don't you? Like, sorry, love, I got to go out. Like,
I got to train.
It's my job, you know? I got to go to the gym. I got to do this, got to do that. Yeah. Right. But yeah, as soon as you retire, it's like, you don't have to do that anymore. Take the bloody kids.
What do you think you'll do then? Like, what would you do for a competitive kick when you finish? Like, obviously, you'll keep cycling, I imagine, because that's a no-brainer. Is there anything that you think or that you want to pursue that you've been thinking about?
Well, I've said I want to do an Ironman. So 100% I'm going to do that. Yeah, yeah. But also, we had Lori Morgan on the podcast who... she's just unbelievable. She does all this ultra running stuff, ultra marathon things. And whoa, she said, she was talking about the Dragon Back. I don't know if you heard of that. It's from like North Wales.
Oh,
down,
I've heard about that. Yeah.
Over 5 days. Like, that's like bonkers. But that's also thinking, oh yeah, maybe that would be quite cool. But definitely an Ironman though. But other than that, around that, I don't know.
Were you like at running?
I haven't ran since I was in school. So... it's a long time now, isn't it?
Because I was chatting to George. You obviously know George North well. And he said he went running with Becky when she finished cycling. Becky James, who obviously you know well from cycling. And he said he just burst out laughing because she couldn't really run properly because she's obviously been on a bike. And he was like, I remember I was with him. He was like, Becky, show Sam your run. She's like, shut up, George, you know, and she wouldn't run. But like, obviously now she can run and she's more normal. Have you been out on a run or does it? Because obviously like there's no need for you to go running. It's not like you're off season. They say, oh, gee, go for a run to sort of keep your cardio going. I guess you just jump on a bike, wouldn't you? So there's no reason for you to run. Or do you do a little bit in between?
Yeah, sometimes, some Octobers, I have this grand plan, like, oh, I'm going to get into my running this winter, you know, and in the off season keep a bit of the weight off, because for me, as soon as I stop, boom, it just piles on, you know. Nothing to do with the beer and all that.
I'm right, because you mentioned about doing the what was it, the Cardiff half before, wasn't it? You were, because that was sort of good timing in the sort of October half season. That would be quite a good little sort of challenge to sort of gradually break you into the Ironmans as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think so. When it's all confirmed, when I decide what I'm going to do, you know, how many more years, I can actually start, you know, getting a bit more of a plan together of how I'm going to do it. But because I say now, oh, I just want to do an Ironman just to do one, you know, and enjoy it and just, you know, ride around. But I'm sure once you start training for it, you'll start chasing times when you're like looking at splits, like, oh, if I just run a bit quicker here, swim a bit quicker there. But we'll see how that goes. Like,
so G, if Sam were to be an elite rider, can we choose a discipline for him? Do you think he would be best concentrating maybe on track, like short explosive stuff? Is he going to be a one-day racer on the road, a Grand Tour contender, maybe a mountain biker? What do you think?
But I'd definitely go more sprint orientated on the track and stuff maybe. But I think out of all the rugby boys, actually maybe not all of them, you know, someone like Shane Williams is pretty handy, and he does Ironman, doesn't he? Quite a few, actually.
Yeah, he's good. Good aerobically as well. Yeah,
yeah. But I don't know. I think, you know, someone like Sam, like if he, you know, committed to it and wasn't too worried about the whole crashing aspect, you know, one day classics. You know, I think, you know, he wouldn't be. You know, we all know, like from his playing days, he loves to just get stuck in and just smash people. Like,
that's half the battle in the in those cobble races is positioning and fighting for position and that. So yeah.
So I'd be rubbish at the endurance stuff. Like I said, I think the like you say the track stuff I'd probably enjoy a bit because I was that sort of kid when I was growing up, like, you know, you remember what it's like, Garrett, you go to the athletics meets and stuff when you're in school and I'd be doing the, like, pentathlon, like the sort of, you know, the half decathlon. And I was always really good. I was always really good at, like, the sprint events, the high jump. I could throw a discus, a shot put, like, whatever you wanted because I was quite explosive. And I'd always be in the running, going into the 800 metres or the 1500 metres. And I'd do the 1500 metres and I'd end up outside the top 10 because I just crashed because I wasn't aerobically blessed. So yeah, I'm very much sort of like down, you know, you've got a continuum. You've got one end of the continuum is aerobic, which is obviously like, you know, your Tour de France and stuff like that. You've got the other end, which is obviously like your sprint cycling. You know, I'm probably quite far down the continuum towards the sprint end, you know. So aerobically, I've always had to work really hard.
Well, there is, luckily, Sam, there is a velodrome relatively close to your home city. And I know, Geraint, you've got a couple of connections there.
Especially now it's been rebranded Geraint Thomas National Cycling. Hang on, let me start that again. Geraint Thomas National Velodrome.
I don't have my rugby ground named after me, not yet, anyway.
I'd pay money, actually, to see like Sam, George, a few other rugby boys like getting up for a key ring or something. I could be the Durney. I could set the pace, swing off three laps to go.
Be good laugh at.
Yeah, that would get some people in watching.
Have you been on a ride with George? What's he like? I imagine George's power output is pretty good.
I've been on the bike with him. I wouldn't necessarily call it a ride. You know, we rode to...
Guess look into him. Good. Let's do it publicly.
He wasn't too bad, to be fair, but we rode to Cowbridge, just had a beer and rode home. It was with my father-in-law. As well, to be fair, George was all right. It was my father-in-law that was slowing us up. He was in a similar boat to you, actually, Sam. He wanted to do Alpe d'Huez after I went up there in 2018, and with COVID, it's been delayed and stuff. And we happened to do it this year, and he was like, you know, trying to train for it, but he didn't really have any idea what it was going to be like. And then he came to watch the tour this year because we went up Alpe d'Huez, and we were doing it ourselves, me and him, like. 2 weeks after the tour, and then he came and he was like, holy shit, like, I can't believe I've got to actually ride up this in 2 weeks. Then he was full on panic training. Yeah. And yeah, he groveled up it for like, it took him about 2 hours.
Oh, savage. That's a long one.
Oh yeah. Well, in the race, it took us 39 minutes. So we could have done it three times and had a coffee and still would have been quicker than him. But and I like to tell him that. On a daily basis.
I heard that on the how much, because when we did the Sakalaba one, we all finished it and somebody said, oh yeah, like you lads would do that in around like 25 minutes or something. So I'm not sure what the time was, but literally just blitzed everyone. I was thinking George maybe more on the sort of velodrome. I don't know if you obviously haven't seen him on there. I imagine he'd be more good at just the sort of sprint stuff, you know, because his legs are enormous. He obviously could put a lot of force through those pedals. But yeah, I don't think he'd be too good at the uphill stuff. Yeah. He's too big. He's massive.
Yeah, he's okay like around the Vale, you know, because it's only 30-odd second little blitz up a climb, isn't it? But No, it is bonkers though when you see you boys like in the flesh, because you know, like it's like anything in it on TV. It looks obviously hard and brutal, but when you actually see you guys like in real life, and it's like, man, I could not imagine running at one of you guys. Snap.
But that, I think it's funny because I think it's exactly the same, because when like say, and you won't know, but say like when I was playing and even coaching and stuff, and like say either you're on in a race in the team room. And all the boys are just like no one even though you're playing, you're at the top of your sport in rugby, no one even pretends they could come anywhere near close. Everyone's just like, oh my days, how fit. That's just unreal. Because it looks like, you can tell even when you're going uphill, it's like, that's my sprint, but you've always got like a real, there's like a big gradient going on. You look like you're just powering up it. And we're thinking, look how quick the bike's going. If that was us, we'd literally be chugging along like a slug at 2 mile an hour, you know? And so I think there's that appreciation for both, you know? And I think, I'm sure cyclists look at, you know, you just think, oh, imagine if you just got parachuted into the Principality on like the 50th minute during a Wales England game. You think, what, this is crazy that if someone did, like you said, if someone did exactly the same to us and parachuted us in and just dropped us on a climb in the middle of one of your longer races, you know, you'd be like an absolute fish out of water, you know. So I think it's nice that I think when you do play sports, you don't go alpha and think, yeah, I could do that. You do have an appreciation and understanding for what the other sportsman's going through. Because you just know the amount of hours, training, all the things that people don't see, what it takes to be able to turn up and get to that level. You know, it's not just something that you just do turn up on a whim. And people do, who do, I think, these charity rides, who turn up and just think they can just wing it, they get humbled very quickly, and normally within the first few hours. You know, it's not even like a few days, a few hours. They just, maybe there's a lot of guys going, oh my God, I can't do this. I'm going to have to pull out, you know, and we have to scale back what we're doing. So I think, yeah, I think unless you actually do it, I would recommend people, if you are, well, obviously they are if they're listening to this, but you know, anyone that, any new listeners, like, give it a go, because you will soon have a whole new appreciation for the sport, big time, you know.
Sam, I think we need to flip this one round, having asked Geraint what sort of rider you would be. Geraint has told me on multiple occasions that he fancies himself as an elusive number 10, very much
in sort of
the classic Welsh mould of sort of Phil Bennett. So I would like to know, firstly, a reaction to that bold claim, and secondly, if Geraint were to start playing club rugby, realistically, what level in the Welsh game could he get to? Like, are we talking like Clandaff seconds that he could get to, or does he need to just rein things in a little bit?
I think Geraint would certainly get money out of playing rugby if he wanted to, if you wound back the clock. I was sort of thinking more of a, you might take this as a compliment, I hope you do. I was thinking more of like, mould you into like a Louis Rees-Sammet, because I was imagining, like, when you're on the wing, because you've got to be so fit to be back three. The fittest players now are back three and nines. They're your fittest players. I think Geraint would be wasted at nine. So I was thinking winger, because the thing wingers got to do now, they're just relentlessly chasing high balls, running back, covering the backfield. So you've got to be incredibly fit, and you've got to be able to repeat high speed efforts a lot, you know. So I think that repeatability would just be, that's probably the hardest thing to train into a rugby player. That's something that obviously G would just get at the click of her fingers, could just repeat high speed efforts just non-stop because of your sort of anaerobic and aerobic base. So I was thinking like on the wing, but I mean, if you want to go 10, I'll back you at 10. I don't know what your handling skills are like, see. I know you have the athleticism for the wing, but I didn't know what your catch and pass would be like as a 10, or your kick, to be honest. So did you play a little bit when you were in Whitchurch or not?
A little bit. I've got it all, mate. I can catch, kick. You know, I can just... whatever you want, I got it.
Seven?
I'll leave that stuff to you guys. Like, but I like to just call the shots, you know?
You're not ugly enough to play seven.
But yeah, that's yeah. The only problem with that, I get the whole running and stuff and, you know, backing it up and being fit and that, but as soon as I got the ball, I'd be in trouble then. Run up and down chasing them.
You can pass it as often as you like.
Yeah, exactly.
That's your own job. You just ship it on.
So what about, have you got any more cycling sort of challenges coming up then? Or I know you've put it on the back burner for a bit, but...
Yeah, there was another one coming up in America. They were doing like going through the canyons. The Grand Canyon ended up at Las Vegas, which obviously sounds amazing, but I couldn't go away to Mallorca, it was only a 5-day commitment, but I'm traveling a lot on weekends anyway, covering rugby games throughout the season. So I didn't want to go away for another, I think it would have been about 12 days of travel with, you know, my wife at home with the dog and a couple of young kids and stuff. So like I say, once they're a bit more self-sufficient, I think I'll probably be able to commit to a few more, you know. So, but I actually love the social side of it. I'm quite, I don't know what you're like. I'm very much an introvert, quite a quiet, insular guy. And I thought going on a cycle charity ride, would be a bit like a fish out of water. Like, you know, I'm not very sociable, but I actually loved the, you know, I met some people there who still texting, you know, regularly, got on with really well, like made new friends. And it sounds strange because I know some listeners think, well, you're 33, you're not too old to make new friends. But you think like, oh, well, I got my friends from sport. I've got my friends from school. You know, I kind of got my friendship group sorted without sounding arrogant. You know, you just don't think your life's going to sort of spin off. Then you sort of meet a few really interesting, nice people and stay in touch, you know. So I actually really enjoyed the social side of it, which really surprised me because I'm not like that at all. You know, I'm very insta kind of guy. So I actually love that. So that's the bit I was most daunted about, actually. The physical challenge of it excites me, even though I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm a good cyclist. I'm saying all this, I'm not good, but I enjoy it, which is the main thing, you know. So I enjoy the challenge of getting out, but the social side of it is actually great as well. And I didn't realize how much I'd enjoy that. So there will be one coming up again soon. I'm, you know, like yourself, I'm patron for Velindra Cancer Hospice in Cardiff. So it's nice to know that, you know, a few hundred thousand goes towards a charity as well and genuinely helps save lives. So yeah, I imagine a year or two's time then I'll be back on the horse and probably doing a more significant challenge.
Well, before that then, we'll have to get you and George down to the
Geraint Thomas National Velodrome in Wales, and we'll do something down there.
That'd be good. We get some cool stuff down there. It'd be good.
Definitely, yeah.
Sam, can you remember what it was like when Geraint won the tour? I suppose because it did coincide with your retirement, maybe your head was full of other stuff, but can you remember how it felt as a Welshman seeing a Welshman win the tour?
Oh, God, it was everywhere. Like, the thing is, when you're playing rugby, and I'm sure Geraint, without being patronised, it might be a little bit like this now, because for you, I mean, because when you're competing in sport, and I think this now, I watch Six Nations, and so I cover it now, you know, on the TV, and I think, flipping it, was I part of this? Like, you just, because it looks so grand, it looks so amazing, and you see how many people are watching it, and the streets are lined, and it's very surreal to think that you are actually part of that. So, like, Geraint, I'm sure you knew, because obviously everything would have exploded, you know, on top. You already had a big profile already, but then, you know, it would go to another level once you're a Tour de France winner. But, like, everyone was just saying, I just remember back home, it was huge news, obviously, because it was, you know, it was one of the greatest sporting achievements from any Welshman ever in any sport, you know. And but everyone was just like, wow, that's just like another level of greatness, pretty much. So that's just, it just totally eclipses what most any sportsman in any sport in all over the world can do. You know, to win that, it's just, when you actually think of how many people cycle worldwide and to be that one guy, you know, it's a phenomenal achievement. And I think it was just a genuine sense of pride that somebody from Wales has actually been able to do that, you know, and it sort of leads the way and it's inspiring for a younger generation. And it's just, the knock-on effect is massive. So I don't know. I think maybe, I said this to players when I speak to rugby boys, I'm like, you don't really appreciate your impact until you retire. And say when Geraint retires now, he'll send, in a positive way, he'll send shockwaves throughout, obviously, the UK, because you've represented, you know, Great Britain and the Olympics and all that. But it'll send shockwaves immensely through the UK and through Wales, because you don't realise what your influence has been on people until you suddenly take a step back and that bubble has suddenly been burst around you. And you actually then, you're just more aware of what's going on. It's mad. So I'm actually looking forward, not to your career ending, I'm looking forward to when you do announce your retirement, the amount of messages you'll receive will be, you won't be able to comprehend how many people will get in touch. It's just such a lovely feeling to realise, God, you've put all this effort in and it is actually appreciated, you know. So I hope you go on for another 10 years, but when the time does come, yeah, I think you'll be surprisingly overwhelmed with the amount of love that you'll get from people in Wales, because, yeah, it's obviously an amazing achievement.
Yeah, it's true that, because I think as a well, any athlete, but especially in bike riding, like, even the tour, there's always another race, like, in a couple of weeks' time, and it's sort of the circus continues, so to speak, you know, and you always have to get back on that wagon and just go to the next race and, you know, whatever, and you never have time to really stop and reflect. But but does that mean, you know, like, you've obviously stopped now and retired, but would you, like, do anything differently or see things slightly differently when you're actually playing?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually, because I remember when we won in 2012, and, you know, you'll remember it, being a rugby fan, we beat England in 2012 in Twickenham, and we won the Triple Crown, which was the first, I think it was the first time we won the Triple Crown in Twickenham ever. And then we went on to win the Grand Slam. And I remember in the changing room after the Triple Crown, Ryan Jones, who was the previous captain, he was chatting to myself and a few of the other players who were playing alongside me, because we were all pretty young back then. We were like young 20s. So boys, like, you got to enjoy this, because this doesn't happen often. Like, this is, and then we beat them, obviously, you know, the year after at home by a record margin, 30 points to 3. And he was like, lads, I'll tell you, like, this little 12, 24-month journey that we're on now is freaky. Like, but we were like, oh, this is international rugby. We've come on. We're smashing out the park. You know, this is great. We've won 2 Six Nations in a row and all our Lions tours. And you quickly realise that it's not that easy. And then we went about 5-6 years without winning a Six Nations and realised how hard it was. But, like, you're right, you're just on this carousel non-stop, and you think success comes easy, and then suddenly you get humbled with a few years where you don't win, and then you realise, crikey, pro sport is hard. Like, it's flipping hard. But I always remember that, like, when he said that, I actually took it on board and thought, no, you're right, this is amazing. And I always tried to appreciate when I was doing something, and the last game I ever played, which I didn't really know it was going to be the last game I played, but I knew I wasn't enjoying playing at that moment in time, and I did want to finish. I wanted to finish from quite a young age, because I found it, sounds really ungrateful to say I didn't enjoy it, but there's a lot I didn't enjoy. And I was standing at the halfway line, you know, obviously captaining the Lions. It's their third test against the All Blacks. We were in Eden Park and they got the extra stands there. It's like 65,000, God knows how many million are watching at home. And they were doing the Haka, and I was standing there as captain of the Lions. I remember just watching across the Haka thinking, wow, this is... Because it felt like, you know, it's like, gee, like... It felt like, it sounds a long time ago, but it didn't feel long ago. We were just walking through the corridors of Wichita High School as a kid and aspiring to be these sort of athletes. And I was there just looking at it thinking, wow, this is it. You know, Lions in Eden Park in Auckland, final test, winner takes all. Like, oh, wow. I was really proud of myself. You know, for the first time, I probably actually managed to take a step back, even in that pressure cooker, to be like, shoot, this is amazing. You know, and I think that's why I was sort of, I was happy to finish, because I was like, right, I've done it all. I don't have to put my family through it anymore. I don't have to put my body through it anymore. And I was happy. So I actually, weirdly, like, I look back, I have no regrets. My only regret would be if I had won. There's only one. It was if I was able to play longer for mental and physical reasons, for both reasons, mentally and physically, I didn't want to keep going. I would have, like I said, I was a bit of an introvert. I played at Cardiff my whole career, which I'm very proud of, and I wanted to do that intentionally. I deliberately stayed. I did go across to France and have a look, and you know, I would have been paid a lot more money to go and play in France, but I did decide to be loyal to Cardiff and stay there. But if I had a few twilight years where I wasn't an international player anymore, it would have been cool to travel a little bit and to maybe play somewhere else. When you're sort of mid-young 20s and I was captain of Wales, it would have been the really wrong decision, would have sent out a bad message. But then, yeah, maybe when my family weren't old enough to be in school, or I might not even had kids at that time, to track me. Like, I've always thought like playing at Bath would be really nice, or maybe a nice club in the south of France. So I did look at Toulon, but it was just not right timing. That's my only regret. But then I never got to that point, because obviously I finished before that. So I kind of look back satisfied. And the good thing is, it's been 5 years now since I played, and I haven't actually got a regret. And even the first year I retired, I was walking the dog up the Wennelt by me. And I can see the stadium, the Principality Stadium, in the distance from my house. And I turned round, I looked back at it, and I was covering the game for BBC that afternoon. So I just had my dog walk before I was going to fly into the stadium. And I'd only been retired a year, and Wales were going for a Grand Slam decider, which they did eventually win against Ireland. And I was sat on this bench, I looked back, and I looked at the stadium. I thought, if someone said they could parachute me in now and I'll play and I'll be part of a Grand Slam decider, or I could just stay here, walk the dog, and just cover the game later on BBC, what would I do? I had this like sort of internal conversation with myself, and I went, I'd stay here and I'd be with the dog. I don't want to be involved. And I've just known from the day I finished, it was the right thing. Like, I think some players finish and they really badly regret it, and they keep talking about how good they were and they missed the game, and it's painfully obvious, and they struggle mentally from that. But I've never had that struggle, so I've always been satisfied. So yeah, it's a good question, but I actually don't have any regrets, which is why I think I'm so happy in retirement and so content, is because, yeah, I did what I wanted to do and I finished on my terms, which is nice.
Just one thing that, you know, like with, I get it sometimes, you know, when it's just stress, like there's, you're rocking up to a tour stage, you know, it's a race you prepared for a year, you've been thinking about it the whole time, and it's raining, you know, it's going to be a bit windy, it's going to be stressful, like you can do everything like right, but you can still get taken out by someone else, you know, luck has to kind of be on your side a bit. And that build up to it is just horrible, and sometimes you can have that little devil on your shoulder, you know, like for that 10-15 minute you might have a bad sort of period, and you're just kind of like, but once you get into it, you're good. Like, it's almost like that computer, as Steve Peters used to say, you know, the computer in your brain sort of takes over and it's automatic and you just love it and you do it. But then then after the tour you do some other races, Tour of Denmark, no disrespect to Tour of Denmark, but 100 odd K to go, and there's all these Danish Vikings like fighting, boxing on with you for every millimeter of the road. And you're like, boys, it's like 100 K to go. Like, nothing's going to happen. Like, we don't have to race like this. Like, that was, I couldn't imagine. I don't know if it was like when you played rugby, but was there sometimes when you were like, pwah, this is a bit like, I can do it like at the very highest level, but like, no, I don't really want to say it, but when you're playing for like Cardiff or something, and you know, you're playing like Edinburgh on a Wednesday night up there, and you're kind of a bit like, shit, I'd rather just not play this and stay safe, you know?
Sure, it's not, Yeah, it's nice when you hear people like yourself say that. And I know you've spoken to Martin Johnson on this pod as well, and I was chatting to Martin Johnson about it, and he was the same. He used to hate like the last meal before we go out and play, like because the nervous energy was horrible. And I wake up on a match day, for anyone I played really, but obviously heightened at international and Lions level, as soon as your eyelids open, I'm like, shit, match day. And it would just be full of nerves, anxiety. But just as you said as well, which is strange, because I'd say, why am I feeling like this? Because I'm so nervous and anxious before every game I play, but I haven't been nervous or anxious for a single minute of any game I've played. When the whistle goes, then I'm playing, I'm in. Like I say, that computer's on, and I'm just like, I love it. And I love that physical confrontation, competition, adversity. But I love, like, that's amazing. I love that. I wish I could just get to that point in the click of a fingers. So the competition is the awesome bit. But when you play, say in rugby, you know, you can't play too much in an annual year for safety reasons. So you might play on a big year. I mean, it can go up to 40, but I would only ever play up to maybe 30, 35 games maximum a year. I mean, when you think about it, you times that by two because you're on the field with half time for 2 hours. That's only like 70 hours of the year maximum. So it's 3 days. Only 3 days of the whole year you're actually competing at that level. So I say this to people, it's what people see, but it's actually a percentage of what being a rugby player is actually about. So yeah, that nervous energy, like it goes on for so long, but actually fuels such a small part of your daily life. But so that's why I very much had a love-hate relationship with rugby, because I'd be like, match day is the worst day about playing rugby, but playing the game and winning is the best bit. So the 10% of victory or success outweighs the 90% of adversity, like tenfold. You know, that's why you do it. You go through all that because it's worth the success, you know? So yeah, when people say like, oh yeah, and I'm sure you get it, they'd be like, oh, you're living the dream. And I'm like, well, I've had to jab myself in the arse to take the dog for a dog walk with painkillers. I've been given a 3 out of 10 in the press. People are saying I should be dropped. I've got a scheduled shoulder op in 3 months. I've gone on tour in a month for another 2 months away from the family. I'm like, I'm not living the dream, mate. Like, and then you, like, now I've got time to reflect. I look back and I think, oh my God, I was so lucky to do what I did. So yeah, when you're in it, it's hard. You actually just crave a bit of normality. I'll tell you one actually true story, which I told the other day actually to someone in private. They couldn't believe it. Just the emotions you go through as a professional. So there's obviously the great bits, you know, when you go, that's what you realize. You've got to take the rough with the smooth. If you want to be admired and you want to have, you know, let's be like, I don't like saying it, but it is a nice factor of pro sport. You know, you get financial freedom, so to speak. You know, you never take those things for granted, especially with the climate that we're going on, that's going on now with cost of living and stuff. So those things, then you got to take the rough with that. If you want that, you've got to be able to take the criticism, the injury, you know, sacrifice some time from family. You can't have it all. You know, you can't. And I was at the time I was away playing in France for the club, like you say, G. Like, I was playing it was still a European game, but it was in the second tier European competition. I was out playing a team in France. This is only a few years when I retired, because I didn't know what I was going to do when I finished playing. I was genuinely, and my mate I was rooming with was going through the same emotions. He was sort of in his 30s like me. We're like, what are we going to do? We were chatting, and I was like, well, I like property, and he liked property. And no joke now, we were both genuinely on the Redrow Homes website looking at potential job opportunities when we finished, like what jobs we'd go into at Redrow. Like, I mean, that desperate. And I remember saying to my agent, like, when I was nearing the end, I was like, mate, I've got nothing. What am I going to do? He's like, Sam, just don't worry. When people know you're going to retire, stuff will happen. I was like, yeah, but as things are right now, I've got nothing. And like, you know, rugby players don't earn the money of cyclists or the footballers or golfers or tennis players. You know, it's a nice living, but only if you get to the very top, and even then it's only going to last you a certain amount of time. So you do have like these worries like outside of rugby as well, but then you look back and yeah, it all works out as long as you plan properly. But yeah, that's just sort of just a snippet of the emotional roller coaster you go through. People just see you turning up on the pitch, cheer your name when you're doing the warm-up, oh great, he's getting lauded, but they don't see everything else that it takes to get to that point. So people say, do I miss it? I'm like, well, yeah, I miss it. Of course I miss playing for Wales. I miss it every day. But do I miss what it takes to get to that point? Then I say, no, I don't miss any of that. So yeah, I miss playing, but I don't miss the 90% of effort that's taken to get to that point, to finish then, to live that last 10%, which is the 100% that people see, but not many people sort of see the ins and outs of being a sportsman. So once they see the whole picture, I think they sympathise a little bit more.
So where are you on that continuum, G? Because you've got another year on your contract. Are you in that place when you're looking towards the end and you're starting to feel ready for the end, or are you still right in the midst of it all?
Yeah, I'm still loving it. To be honest, like last year was the lowest point for sure. Like I think we spoke about it on the pod, like the whole contract stuff, the tour was terrible, the Olympics even worse, and like it was a bad like couple of months, to be honest. But then this year has just been great. I've just like loved racing, still enjoy riding my bike, which I think is the main thing. Still happy to, you know, hurt myself, and like as in efforts wise, not actually falling off. Like that's, although I've been fortunate so far this year. But yeah, and I'm still like enjoying all that. Like it's enjoying, you know, there's a lot more younger guys, or maybe I'm just getting older actually, but there's a lot of young guys in the team now. And enjoying like riding with them as well, and not telling them what to do and stuff, but just sort of, you know, leading a bit more by example. I'm not one to just sort of like, you know, be loud and talking all the time. But yeah, so yeah, the team, like Rod Ellingworth, who's sort of team manager now. Dave still oversees everything, but he oversees the whole of Ineos Sport now, like Nice football and everything. But yeah, Rod's keen for me to extend and things, but it's just one of those. We've got to sit down this winter, really, decide with Sarah. And, but, you know, next year will be my 17th year as a professional. And I am actually looking forward to doing something different. I'm not wishing it away or anything, and I'm not like over it, but the thought of doing something different now is exciting as well, because, well, it's a long time that, isn't it?
It's nice to hear that though, because that's the one thing, like, yeah, that the one, there was a time I was in like towards the end, I was in a team meeting on the pitch, and normally at the end some of the senior guys might talk about, you know, what was good and bad in the meeting, you know, what we'll do, you know, when we come back in a couple of days' time. I remember that's normally a meet I might contribute to, or, you know, I might say something. But I remember at this point, I was looking at the grass, remember just thinking, I got no interest in this at all. Like, it was weird. Like, it just, like a candle, it just went out, and it was straight, and I knew it was time. That's why it's really nice to hear when you say you still enjoy it. I still love covering and watching rugby now, and I love the sport, but I got to a point, I don't know why, still can't put my finger on why, I wanted to stop competing. But knowing, like hearing that you still enjoy it and you want to compete, that's the main thing. As long as you still want to and you enjoy competing, then yeah, like keep going, because then I think it's the people who, say if it was taken away from you now, that's the people I think who would struggle more in retirement. I think if that flame is still there, then like still run with it, or excuse the pun, like you still cycle with it, like still, yeah. Still go, do you know what I mean? And do it, and like just, because like, it is a gift if you're still able to do it, you know, from an injury point of view. And so yeah, it's good to hear that you're still enjoying competing. That's why I don't want to talk ill of rugby and trying to say people, I know you should retire, it's great, do what I'm doing. I think as long as you're still enjoying it, you can still compete, and you're healthy, then yeah, go as long as you can, you know. So it's good to hear you're still in that frame of mind.
Yeah, looking at it the other way as well though, I'm also mindful I don't want to do 1 year too many and like be the one who, yeah, actually finds out I'm over it and it's March and I'm like, shit, I've still got 9 months. And I'm, you know, it's like there's been a lot of guys in teams, I've only been in one team more or less, but there's been a lot of older guys that have come through there in the last year or so, and they're always like moaning and on the bus and stuff, you know, guys that just aren't the best to sort of be around for morale and stuff. So I definitely don't want to turn into that either. So yeah, don't want to do one too many.
It's good you recognise that.
Mate, I'm wise.
So Sam, before we finish, tell us about your podcast rather than Geraint's. What are you up to?
Okay, I'll do my 30-second elevator pitch, yeah.
Nice.
Thanks, Tom. So I'm doing a, with you know, similar with Crowd Network, I'm doing a podcast called Captain. So I'm hosting it, and I'm speaking to various captains from all different types of sports, cricket, football, athletics, rugby. And just basically, it's been quite therapeutic for me actually, just be able to bounce off them and see how they've done things and compare notes, and it's been really good. So that's coming out soon as well. So really enjoyed doing that, and it's my first venture into the podcast world. So really enjoying it.
Quality. I'll have to listen to that. I think you got Luke Rowe coming on as well, haven't you? I think he said.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. So I say we got to sort of try and find people who fit the mold of, who've been in, because there's obviously loads of sportsmen I'd love to have on there, but because the theme is sort of captaincy, it's sort of people who've been in captaincy type roles, you know, in their discipline, you know. So yeah, Luke's scheduled to come on as well. So look forward to, I've never met him, properly, you know. So I look forward to chatting to him as well.
Mate, he's full of shit. So yeah, take everything with a pinch of salt. And you can leave that in. You don't have to edit that out, Tom.
Yeah.
All right, well, cheers, thanks for that, Tam. It's been well, pleasure, been great to catch up, and yeah, maybe see you down at the oh, is it a Jew Barrage in Rubina by you?
Yeah, that's the one, the Jew Barrage. You can count, you can sort of bank I'm going to be there once a week or once a fortnight at least. So yeah, I'm in there more often than not, so you'll probably catch me in the local curry house in Rubina.
Quality. Well, thanks for coming on, been a pleasure.
Lovely, cheers lads, good to speak to you, and see you again soon, no doubt.
Gee, I am delighted to announce that we have got Momentous back on board as a sponsor for Series 3 of the GTCC. Momentous, a little bit like you, Gee, are dedicated to optimising both the mind and body, and they're leading the way for high-performance seekers at all levels. Right, so for those not familiar with Momentous, Gee, tell us all about their flagship product.
Yeah, so PR lotion is something I've used on my body for years, Tom. It basically delivers bicarb directly to your muscles via your skin and bypasses the gut, which I don't know if you've ever drunk bicarb, Tom, but that's a big plus. The best time to use it, I find, is an hour and a half before your workout on Zwift or out on the road or whatever you're doing. And it's not too sticky either. It doesn't get stuck in your hairs if you've forgotten to shave, and it definitely helps me train harder.
All of this is true, G. It is actually scientifically proven to improve performance and decrease muscle soreness, and helps you make all those training goals. If you want to get your hands on some PR lotion, Momentous are giving GTCC members, that's you listening right now, yes you, 25% off. Give them the code G.
Just head over to prlotion.com and use the code GTCC2022 to get 25% off today. Enjoy.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tom, Zwift are back for their third season sponsoring the GTCC.
Which means our Wednesday 6 p.m. group rides continue.
Exactly. Just hop on your trainer, open up the Zwift app and join the group ride. You get to ride alongside us, all our club members, and wear the in-game GTCC jersey. And if you're new to Zwift, just go to Zwift.com to start your free trial today. During this season of the pod, we're going to be walking you through all the new stuff we've been trying out on the app. Just think of us as your testing team. So, Chairman Tom, what have you been trying this week?
This week, G, I've been having a go at some dynamic workouts. These use Zwift's terrain to train, so you can hit sprints, smash climbs, and put out steady efforts on the flat, just like you might be used to doing in real life. Just without the stop signs, the traffic, the headwinds, or the fear of blowing up half an hour from home with no food left. It's basically like riding your bike just like you would before indoor trainers. And that to me is pure magic. So, if training plans or set intervals are too boring, too intimidating, or maybe just not your thing, go and give dynamic workouts a go this week.
Right, Chairman Tom, what's the first item on the agenda today?
Yeah, well, Geraint, I've been very busy. I am on a recruitment drive at the moment as chairman. We are reopening applications for our listeners to become GTCC road captains. We appointed over 65 of you, I think, last season, but there is always room for more. So here's the plan. We want passionate riders who love organising meetups and feel able to lead in-person group rides in their local areas. We have some amazing regular rides in the likes of Herefordshire and Worcestershire, but we would love to expand this. So, if you're interested, either fill out the form on our Facebook group or email gtcc@crowdnetwork.co.uk and producer Louise will send you the form.
Go on, you know you want to. Tom, I've also got an email from Matt Williams.
Yeah. So you might remember that Matt posted a picture in the GTCC Facebook group of him in his full beautiful GTCC kit in what he claimed was the steepest velodrome in Europe. Well, gee, we have found out which one it was. It was, in fact, in Geneva in Switzerland, which I think we got close to, didn't we? Matt has emailed to say, G was spot on in that it is only 166.66 metres long. And that's exactly why the banks are so steep. Matt continues, now, according to Wikipedia, it is a whopping 56 degrees compared with Calshot, which we mentioned, 45 degrees, and the very shallow Geraint Thomas National Velodrome of Wales is 42 degrees. Matt goes on to say, clearly there is only one way to find out, and that is for Tom and G to come and settle the next round of their sporting challenge out here, as I'm sure they'll be passing through at some point. I'm always happy to host them for a jam cheese and ham sandwich. I feel, Matt, like this challenge is slightly stacked towards the professional cyclist who has won 2 Olympic gold medals on the track.
Yeah, quite possibly. But the jam, ham and cheese sandwich is what sold it for me. We should go just for that.
What are we going to call it? A CJH?
CJH. Yeah, that works. A CJH. A half a CJH. 2 halves of a CJH. Because we're having open sandwiches as well, aren't we, Tom? Half sandwiches.
Of course we are, yeah, because we're half Danish now.
I agree with what you said there. Although I would dispute the 45 degrees of Calshot and 42 in the Geraint Thomas National Velodrome Wales. I'm still not, 42 sounds okay, but because we actually ran around Calshot when we were kids, like up on the blue, and it was bloody steep. And we've done it in Manchester as well, and it seems a lot steeper than just 3 degrees difference, but I don't know, maybe, you know, adolescence growing. I don't know, your limbs a bit funny. Maybe I just got a different feel for it. I don't know, but...
Well, Wikipedia is only Wikipedia, G. It's, you know, it's not absolutely definitive at all times, so...
Yeah. Well, I could go on it now, couldn't I, and change it technically?
Well, you could, yeah. There
I
you
might go and change it now. Geraint Thomas National Velodrome, Wales, 142 degrees. Steepest bank in the world.
We have also, G, had a lovely email in from Simon Bulmer, who is one of our official GTCC domestiques. Simon says, I started listening to the podcast from the beginning after finding you in December. In the last 6 weeks, I've worked in 4 countries, moved house, helped my parents move house, and settle them into my home as they need care, all with my 3-year-old boy in my shadow. You have woken up the cycling bug in me. He says, I quit more than 30 years ago after a friend got run over by an oil tanker when we were training in Southern Africa. At the time, we were teenagers and cycling was everything. I won the Namibian Championships at under 15s. We travelled all over racing and having a great time. I have now just bought a bike via the Cycle to Work scheme and I'm really enjoying being on the road again. And I've got my new Zwift hub in the garage while I make space in the house for it. And let my wife know about my unauthorised purchase. Forgiveness is easier than permission, they say. Welcome back to Cycling Simon.
Yeah, I love that saying as well. But, good on you. Good to see he's back enjoying riding the bike.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear, because we've been doing this pod for a while. It's nice to hear that people are still discovering it from the start and dipping into the GTCC community.
Most definitely. And here's a reminder then to go and join the community on the GTCC Facebook group. You can connect with other members, hear about our weekly Zwift rides or our in-person meetups as well.
Yeah, and if you fancy becoming an official GTCC domestique like Simon, then go to patreon.com/GTCC. You'll get access to bonus monthly content, to discount codes on merch and much, much more. Final item for today, Geraint. We have had a request in from, quote, Welsh Rich, who's asked us to get Lachlan Morton on the podcast. Thoughts, season 4?
Yeah, why not? I don't think I must have raced with him a couple of times, but I don't know him that well, but I've obviously seen the mad things he's done. He was riding in flip-flops, wasn't he?
Yeah, this is, if you don't know Lachlan, listeners, he is an Aussie rider who rides for EF Education, who, G, has sort of, it began as a side project, didn't it? And now it seems to have taken it over his whole life of ridiculous sporting challenges that most of us would run a million miles from.
Yeah, I think he did the whole Tour de France in front of us, like a day in front. He did the stage we were doing the next day. So, yeah, fair play to him. And I think he ended with maybe not flip-flops, but like sandals, you know, because I don't know what happened with his feet, but yeah, it doesn't sound pretty. I actually met someone that reminds me, that rode from Auckland, and he's riding all the way down to the south of the South Island. I met him in Queenstown on top of some random climb, and he was wearing some, Jesus sandals, you know, those things. And he had ridden all the way down from there, and I was like, oh, what are you doing it for? He's just like, oh, yeah, just, you know, something to do. He's from America, and he's going to Sri Lanka next, and I was like, mad. So I took a picture of him, actually. I should send it to you, yeah.
Well, we'll stick that on our social media channels, shall we?
On that note, see you next week.
Enjoy Los Angeles.
Will do. Oh, what do they say? No. I'll do American accent next week when I've got there. When I've been here for a week.
It's too much of a transition for you from going from Australia to New Zealand to LA. We'll give you a bit more time.
My mind is fried. Next time.
That was the Geraint Thomas Cycling Club. Thanks to Club Secretary Louise Gwilliam, Heads of Music Emma Hickman and Frank Beecher, Head of Social Archie Biltcliffe, and our Honorary President Mike Carr. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Ciao, ciao.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.